Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on the English program. I'm Linda Bordoni, and here's a taste of what we'll be talking about today. Pope Benedict XVI says that we have a duty towards future generations, and that is to entrust them with the earth in a state in which they too can inhabit it. The chairman of the Zimbabwe Conservation Trust speaks of the devastation of wildlife in his country and of the loss of endangered species of animals, of ecosystems, and of national identity. And Father Jim Brand reflects on the beauty of the universe and on the needlessness for pettiness. Pope Benedict XVI says that we have a duty towards future generations, and that is to entrust them with the earth in a state in which they too can inhabit it. The Pope was speaking Sunday to the crowd that had gathered with him in Castel Gandolfo to pray the midday Angelus. He recalled that September the 1st is the day for protecting creation, promoted by the Italian Episcopal Conference. But first, Benedict promised his prayers for the 33 Chilean miners trapped underground since the beginning of August. He recalled the plight of the miners and expressed his particular affection for them, and said that he commends them and their families to the intercession of St. Lawrence, patron of miners. Charles Collins reports.
During his Sunday Angelus address, Pope Benedict said he was thinking with particular affection of the trapped miners in San Jose, Chile.
Quisiera recordar con particular afecto a los mineros que se encuentran atrapados.
He assured them and their families of his constant prayer in the hope of a happy conclusion to the work that's being done to rescue them. The 33 Chilean miners have been trapped for more than 20 days, 700 meters below ground. Speaking from the papal summer residence in Castel Gandolfo, the Holy Father also recalled that on September 1st in Italy, the Church marks the day for the safeguarding of creation.
Quest'anno ci ricorda che non ci può essere pace senza rispetto dell'ambiente.
He said that this year reminds us that there can be no peace without respect for the environment. The Pope said that we have a duty to pass the earth onto the next generations in such a state that they can live in it with dignity and further preserve it. Before the Marian prayer, Pope Benedict spoke of the importance of humility, drawing from the day's gospel. He said we look to Christ as a model of humility and generosity, and he said we can learn from him how to be patient against temptations, lenient towards insults, and obedient towards God when in pain. He also spoke to English-speaking pilgrims.
I pray that all of you, whether you are here on holiday or on pilgrimage or pursuing studies in Rome, will be able to draw closer to the Lord in prayer and thanksgiving. May God bestow abundant blessings upon all of you and upon your families and loved ones at home.
Pope Benedict also made mention of the feast marking the martyrdom of St. John the Baptist, whom he called the greatest of the prophets of Christ. He said the Baptist managed to deny himself to make room for the Savior and suffered and died for the truth. I'm Charles Collins.
Thanks there to Charles Collins for that report. Well, it certainly isn't the first time Pope Benedict XVI has linked world peace with preserving the environment. In this year's message for the World Day of Peace, Benedict called for a long-term review of the world's current economic model. And in the document entitled, If You Want to Cultivate Peace, Protect Creation, the Pope asks, can we remain indifferent before the problems associated with such realities as climate change, desertification, the deterioration and loss of productivity in vast agricultural areas, the pollution of rivers and aquifers, the loss of biodiversity, the increase of natural catastrophes, and the deforestation of equatorial and tropical regions? And after a methodical analysis of the situation, the Pope concludes by saying that not only policymakers have a responsibility towards environmental preservation, but the Catholic Church as well. The Church, he says, must protect earth, water, and air as gifts of God the Creator meant for everyone, and above all to save mankind from the danger of self-destruction. Mankind, writes the Pope in his message, must renew and strengthen that covenant between human beings and the environment, which should mirror the creative love of God. Yes, since the very beginning of his pontificate in 2005, Pope Benedict XVI has been increasingly outspoken on environmental issues. He has called the fight against climate change a moral obligation, and among the Pope's new seven sins announced last year are destruction of the environment, excessive wealth, and the creation of poverty. Wildlife has been nearly wiped out on Zimbabwe's former private game ranches in the 10 years since the government there began seizing and dividing the areas into small plots. According to the Zimbabwe Conservation Task Force, some 90% of animals have been lost since 2000, while the country has seen an estimated 60% of its total wildlife killed off to help ease massive economic woes. Now, I know you're aware my focus is often on Zimbabwe and on the dramatic predicament of its impoverished inhabitants that suffer, amongst other things, political intimidation and total lack of press freedom. But this is the first time I have given all of my attention to the state of the nation's natural patrimony, its nature and its once plentiful wildlife. To do so, I telephoned someone who has dedicated a lifetime of work and has put his own safety at risk to try and save the animals that are left and raise awareness as to the dramatic situation of wildlife conservation in his country.
My name is Johnny Rodriguez. I'm the chairman of the Zimbabwe Conservation Task Force. The organization was formed in 2000 because of the amount of poaching that was happening in the river systems. I represented the country for 5 years fishing, and one thing led to the other. And then, as the land reform came in, more and more of the game ranches and the people that had wildlife were seeking help. And one thing led to the other, and that's where we are today.
Johnny, now Zimbabwe is in the news not as often as it should be, as far as I'm concerned, because of the pretty desperate human rights situation there. But conservation as such is never really mentioned. Why is it important to keep awareness high as regards to the importance of the natural patrimony of a country like Zimbabwe?
Well, for one, your wildlife, your environmental issues, you need that in the ecosystem. That's the first thing. And secondly, it's one of the biggest foreign currency earners for a country like this where everything has collapsed. You need tourism and you need the wildlife. We have to preserve them so that at least we can actually show the world the beauty and the animals in its own habitat and not in a zoo, where it's cruel. And because of that, we've got the responsibility of actually trying to look after them and not abuse it so that there is something left for the future generation.
Not only for the future generation, but maybe also for local Zimbabweans who have much to gain if their wildlife is preserved as it should be.
Well, the thing is, because of the turmoil, there's no law and order in this country. I mean, the law only works on the one political side. There's bigger issues. The economy has collapsed. The authorities, the guardians, haven't got money. They're shooting a lot of their animals to feed the army, the police, the air force, and themselves. And then we've got the bushmeat market. You've got the commercial hunting that goes on, which is not ethical. There's a lot of problems, and there's not enough funds to actually do the preservation of these animals.
Johnny reels off the issues with nonchalance. They are obviously everyday problems to him. The fact that there is no law and order in the country, the economic collapse, the hunger and the necessity to shoot wild animals to feed the army or the family. But then he also mentions the bushmeat market with its indiscriminate and cruel killings and the unethical commercial hunting which decimates wildlife populations, including many endangered species, as well as destroying the ecosystem.
Would you say that most poaching is for eating because the people are hungry, or is it to commerce in skins and tusks and whatever?
Well, you can understand if the people live in the surrounding areas, they're not getting any benefits. And the biggest problem we've got is the actual authorities. We just managed to stop animals being exported to Korea because of the world opinion and a lot of the conservation groups that lobbied, and we managed to get the animals released. That's one of the stories. You know, they try and make money as much as they can because there's nothing being produced and sent out.
Here, Johnny is referring to a recent episode which was reported by the international media, revealing that Zimbabwe's government had agreed to sell giraffes, zebras, baby elephants and other wild animals to be displayed to the North Korean public in a zoo.
The bigger issue, you can understand when a person lives the surrounding areas of a wildlife, they have to feed the families. That it doesn't do that much damage. But where the damage is coming in is when the authorities say, we've got an abundance of this, and they start killing, and to try and keep the military and the police force on their side, they have to shoot the animals and feed them meat because the cattle industry is collapsed too.
I've read that a lot of game ranchers have lost between 80 and 90% of their wildlife to poachers. And also with a lot of disregard for endangered species. Is that true?
Yes, it is true. I mean, before the land reform back in 1995, we had 640 game ranches. We had about 15 conservancies. We're busy at the moment trying to save one of the last ones that we've got, which is being invaded. And, you know, out of the 640, we've got none left. The game is 100% been destroyed or eaten, poached out. And it's serious problems, it really is. And since then, now the state land where it's reserved for parks and all, what more is where they're taking a hell of a punishment at the moment. And we're losing a lot of game.
Surely it must be pretty evident that the tourism industry is also vanishing, I imagine, in Zimbabwe. I mean, if there's no more wildlife to see, who is coming to Zimbabwe's national parks on say, photographic safaris?
Well, there's still a few, not much. You know, we need more. And the thing is, if they don't put a stop and enforce the laws that is there to preserve the wildlife, then we've got no chance at all. But if they do enforce the laws and have stiff penalties for any corrupt person or any person that's actually doing the destruction, then we've got a chance. And, you know, anything to preserve wildlife, you need the funds. And without tourism, we're in deep water.
What about since the swearing in of the new, shall we call it, unity government? Have you had any kind of support from the opposition?
You know, most of our wildlife areas are being encroached by promises made by government. And the government of national unity are trying to resolve the political issue. A lot of people say it's a government of national unity. I call it a government of national disaster.
What shall we do? What Johnny is pointing out very clearly is that harmony cannot be achieved without unison. Things go hand in hand, and when a nation suffers, everyone in that nation suffers, right down to the very last little dung beetle toiling its way through a degraded environment.
Do you think it's important that the world opinion understands that, yes, humans do come first, but so does the overall situation of a nation and its natural heritage?
Yeah, you see, the thing is, you know, the humans have got rights. There's a lot of people lobbying for animal rights where you can utilize the natural resources in a sustainable manner, that there is something there where it's not happening at the moment. I mean, you know, it's very hard when you see the atrocities and the inhumane things that are actually happening where animals are being snared and taking anything from 3 to 5 days to die. and then nobody is actually collecting that meat to feed the undernourished or the poorer people. So, you know, there's a lot of problems.
Do you have hope for the future?
Yes, I do. I look at it, you know, if it was, say, 7 years ago, I didn't have any hope. But I do see a bit of a light in the tunnel, and especially now with a lot of the conservation groups and people are trying to find solutions. I mean, the solution is that we have to go back to the grassroots, educate the people and show them the right way of actually looking after their own resources. Then we've got a good chance. And I'm very positive that it's going to happen. It's just the time, and time is not with us.
The world did hear about Mugabe's plan to sell all those animals to the North Korean zoo. And thanks to your lobbying, thanks to the voice of many conservationists, that plan didn't come through. Is that quite a big victory for you?
Well, it is. It's the biggest victory we've had. And now we're trying to get now them to commit and give us a document to actually state that they won't export any more animals out of Zimbabwe, and we should actually try and preserve. We've got a new guy that's come in, Chadenga, which is actually doing a lot of the good things. So let's see. You know, we have to be positive about this. I believe we can do it. And if everybody unites and talk with the same voice, and we do the walk and do the talk, or do the talk with the walk, then we know we've got a good chance of actually preserving and getting the country back to normality.
So would you encourage people to come to Zimbabwe, let's say, for a holiday?
Yes, there's still a few beautiful places. You know, we've got some of the seven wonders in the world. Because of all the logging and all the exposure that we've done, we still have not an abundance of animals, but there is some of the beauty still there. And I do recommend to tourists to come in. I mean, that's one way that will help us actually save these animals, where they won't have the excuses to say, look, we haven't got tourism, so let's kill these animals, because then we can feed the people. And if money is being generated through tourism, so be it. I think that way it stops a lot of the poaching, and a lot of the things will be in the public eye, and that is the right way to do it.
And it will be a boost for the country as a whole as well.
Yes, yes. You know, I'm not a politician, so the thing is, you know, I leave the politicians in their own little camp. The rest of us, the Zimbabweans, the conservation groups, are not involved in politics. All we want to do is the right thing and do the right thing.
When you said we have one of the seven wonders of the world, you're referring to the Victoria Falls, aren't you?
Yeah, Victoria Falls, we've got the Zimbabwean ruins. You know, this country is very unique because there's six regions in it. And you go from one country, it's like Sinai Desert, and you go to the other side of the country, it's like the Eastern Highlands in Scotland. So, you know, there's so much to see in a small country like us. The beauty is there. We've got the Kariba Dam. We've got the Zambezi, which has got that, one of the only type of species in the world, the Zambezi tigerfish. There's so many things, and there's a lot of the endangered species of animals here. The bird life is beautiful. So, yes, I do recommend tourists to come here.
So if you're looking for a holiday destination, why not take Zimbabwe into consideration? It truly is a beautiful country and in dire need of all the support it can get. And don't hesitate to contact Johnny Rodriguez, as he himself suggests. He will answer any query and come up with useful suggestions. He can easily be reached through the webpage of the Zimbabwe Conservation Task Force. And now Father Jim Brand takes us into the magnificent countryside of the English poet D.H. Lawrence with a delightful meditation on how important it is not to be petty.
Hello, it's Father Jim. I'm just thinking about those sort of things that just spoil us. On the whole, we're good, but we can only become better if we admit we're good. You can't jump from being bad straight to being better. Because the word better is the comparative of the word good. We have to admit we're good first, and then we'll become better. And this was brought home to me when I went to one or two master classes. I was learning some piano concertos. And I remember I was going to play Beethoven's Emperor Piano Concerto, and I banged my fists down on the keyboard for the opening chord, and my teacher stopped me. Stop! He said, I can't hear the third note in the left hand. Try again. So I tried again. Stop! Well, I was getting frustrated. He kept stopping me. And eventually he laughed. He said, look, Jim, you want to give me a concert, don't you? You'd like to play the whole piano concerto to give me such joy. I said, I'd love to. He said, in which case, I should be paying you. But you're paying me to take you from one level to another. And as we advance in perfection, the next stage gets more and more painful. For instance, people need master classes in the spiritual life. This doesn't mean the person giving the class is necessarily ahead of anyone else. I remember enjoying enormously Torval and Dean, the great ice dancing champions. They had an enchanting teacher. Now, maybe she wasn't as good a skater as they were, otherwise she would have been as famous. But she could still take them from one level to another. And so what I'm suggesting is that we're good, but occasionally something spoils it. You know, some little beastliness. And this poem called Snake by David Herbert Lawrence, D.H. Lawrence, has taught me a little bit about those little things that just spoil us. And perhaps we could have a little think about those little things that just spoil the goodness God has placed in us. It's called Snake. A snake came to my water trough on a hot, hot day, and I in pajamas for the heat to drink there. In the deep, strange, scented shade of the great dark carob tree, I came down the steps with my pitcher, and I must wait. Must stand and wait, for there he was at the water trough before me. He reached down from a fissure in the earth wall in the gloom and trailed his yellow-brown slackness soft-bellied down over the edge of the stone trough and rested his throat upon the stone bottom. And where the water dripped from the tap in a small clearness, he sipped. With his straight mouth softly drank through his straight gums into his slack, long body silently. Someone was before me at my water trough, and I, like a second comer, waiting. He lifted his head from his drinking as cattle do. He looked at me vaguely as drinking cattle do, and flickered his two-forked tongue from his lips and mused a moment, stooped and drank a little more, being earth brown, earth golden, from the burning bowels of the earth on the day of Sicilian July, with Etna smoking. The voice of my education said to me he must be killed, for in Sicily the black snakes are innocent, the gold are venomous. Voices in me said, if you were a man, you'd take a stick and break him down and finish him off. But must I confess how I liked him? How glad I was he'd come like a guest in quiet to drink at my water trough and depart peaceful, pacified and thankless into the burning bowels of the earth. Was it cowardice? I dared not kill him. Was it perversity that I longed to talk to him? Was it humility to feel so honoured? I felt so honoured. Yet those voices If you were not afraid, you'd kill him. Truly, I was afraid. I was most afraid. But even so, honoured still more that he should seek my hospitality from out the dark door of the secret earth. He drank enough, and lifted his head dreamily as one who's drunken, and flickered his tongue like a forked knight in the air, so black, seeming to lick his lips, and looked round like a god unseeing into the air, and slowly turned his head, and slowly, very slowly, as if thrice a dream, proceeded to draw his slow length, curving round, and climb again the broken bank of my wall face. And as he put his head into that dreadful hole, and as he slowly drew up, snake easing his shoulders and entered further, a sort of horror, a sort of protest against his withdrawing into that horrid black hole, deliberately going into the blackness and slowly drawing himself after, overcame me. Now his back was turned. I looked round, put down my pitcher, I picked up a clumsy log and threw it at the water trough with a clatter. I think it didn't hit him, but suddenly that part of him that was left behind convulsed in undignified haste, wreathed like lightning, and was gone into the black hole, the earth-lipped fissure in the wall front, to which in the intense still noon I stared with fascination. And immediately I regretted it. I thought how paltry, how vulgar, what a mean act. I despised myself and the voices, my accursed human education. And I thought of the albatross. And I wish he'd come back, my snake. For he seemed to me again like a king, like a king in exile, uncrowned in the underworld, now due to be crowned again. And so, I missed my chance with one of the lords of life. And I have something to expiate. A pettiness. Amen.
That's all from the English feature program today, and from me, Linda Bordoni. But we will be back at this same time tomorrow, so join us then. You can also listen to our programs on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. You're listening to Vatican Radio's English program. Laudetur Jesus Christus.